This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 8th of February, 1954. The title of this lecture is Summary of Course Data. This lecture is 60 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Arrow Productions.
This is February the 8th, 1954. The material which we have had up to this time is intensely causative. It itself is the woof and warp of thinkingness and so forth. What you should have very firmly of this material at this time is at least a picture of your preclear as a mass of communication lines which have innumerable C's in them and innumerable E's in them. And what you should realize is he can occupy any position of any C or any E, and that he is searching relentlessly through this mass of communication material to determine what is the C that is making an E out of him. And you should have firmly in mind by now that automaticity is itself handleable by making the preclear do it, and that anything that is automatic is a source of randomity, which is to say, if something is automatic, it is unpredictable. As an example of this, an automobile, as it goes down the road, breaks down. Well, the automobile is an automaticity for transportation. That an individual isn't doing it himself immediately poses the fact that he's depending upon a bunch of automatic reactions in terms of machinery to propel him, and his prediction of them does not embrace the fact that the automobile may break down. If he were pervading the entire automobile, he would know what weak parts there were. But he's depending upon this totally, you might say, as a piece of machinery, and therefore he is not warned, or he has no awareness, or he has no prediction of a breakdown. So he is very surprised to get a blowout, a burned out valve, a dead battery, any one of these things. And this, having been made automatic, it's an automaticity which the individual has accepted, becomes, of course, a no predict. Now, an automatic thing becomes a no predict. When a person sets up an automatic machine to send him places, it then becomes unpredictable. And so he thinks of a place and it sends him someplace, and after a while he gets to wondering why every time he thinks of a place he goes someplace, and it's simply an automaticity which he has set up to send him places. And he can't predict it anymore, so he becomes aberrated and his mind starts racking around all over the universe. Now you'll see this manifestation preclear after preclear. Just that manifestation of which I spoke, a machine that sends him places. You'll get somebody exteriorized, and the next thing you know, you say, well, are you in Paris? If you were to say, are you in Paris, or something of this sort, he would be in Paris. You say, are you in South America? He'd be in South America. Therefore, we don't ask positively where he is, because we'll key one of these machines. And so there we have our problem in automaticity and randomity. Randomity is the ratio of predicted to unpredicted motion. It's all randomity. It's automaticity is something that is set up outside the control of the preclear. It's usually set up or accepted by the preclear, but is outside the control of the preclear, and is, of course, then has to run him to some degree, and therefore is his superior to some degree. Now, I point out a therapy originated by a fellow by the name of Bats Mortar. It's called Q therapy. And this is a dramatization, 100% dramatization. It ruins cases, by the way, simply because the individual sets up everything that audits him as an automaticity. So therefore he sets up all auditing as an automaticity, which then sets up all auditing as a randomity, and so do these cases operate. You try to audit one of these cases that's done this, has set up a queue. And he sets up a queue, which then proceeds to audit the individual. Now you try to audit this individual, you see. And this individual then immediately gives you a bad time. Why? Because the individual has auditing set up as an automaticity, which means, of course, then that auditing is a randomity. So therefore, it's to be contested by him, he thinks. And so the case is put almost immediately beyond reach of an auditor by setting up one of these queues. You see that? Elementary. You come along then to a group of people who have gone south on cue, and you try to audit this group, and you'll have a bad time of it, because auditing is a randomity. It's been set up as an automaticity. There's no value in the process, quite the contrary. It's comparable to, and actually is a takeoff from, an experimental process of about 1946, whereby an individual it was found that an individual could set up his entire conscious mind alongside of himself to give him answers. And this first experiment mentioned in Dianetics, the Modern Science of Mental Health, was actually a demonstration of automaticity, but wasn't recognized as such in its total meaning. It took me quite a while to pick that up. Unfortunately, that material being released was picked up just as such, and was picked up as a therapy, and has struggled along ever since, much to people's horror. Now, you can set up all kinds of things as an automaticity. You should realize that a preclear who is self-auditing is running on an automaticity of auditing. He is self-auditing. He must have set up something to audit him. This comes about from a scarcity of preclears and scarcity of auditors. You remedy a scarcity of preclears by wasting them in brackets, scarcity of auditors by wasting them in brackets, and you do a lot to smooth out self-auditing. Self-auditing is a case manifestation. It is a very bad case manifestation. It says the individual has set up a demon circuit, a senior to himself. Now, it doesn't mean that an individual can't audit himself as such, but there are very strange processes that are used in self-auditing. Self-auditing, otherwise, is also the assignment, continuous and continual assignment of cause. Now, you should have that down fairly well. You should know, too, that we are trying to stretch a direct communication line from C to E, where the preclear is C. An individual who is racking around trying to find an enormous number of C's, of course, each time is making himself E, so he's running his case backwards. He's running himself to the E end of the line, not the C end of the line. Any system of communication, any network of communication, can be divided into component parts anywhere on its courses of C and E. You can take a Western Union telegraph line, which runs from New York to San Francisco, and you can take that segment of it, which goes from St. Louis to Denver, as C to E. Now, any communication line can have a C or an E on it, but when there's a C where there's an E, and an E where there's a C, we get a conversation, not a communication. A conversation is a specific kind of communication. It's a double communication. Now, you should have that down very well. And now we should have also some idea of what havingness is, and this thirst for havingness. Now, I doubt many of you have gotten forward to turning an avalanche of outflow on people while they're still connected with bodies, still hang around with inflow avalanches to too great a degree. And an inflow avalanche, however, is perfectly all right. Your individual course is on an energy starvation basis. Now, some of the processes I'm going to run on you this week resolve these various problems in a very straight and specific manner. But that's beside the point. The point we're trying to make is that the individual's concentration on his case is, of course, electing the case C and is putting him at E. All right, now if this is the case, your individual being at E, we have an immediate problem as an auditor in assignment of cause. We've set up a reversed communication line, and then we carry on with that reversed communication line straight on through a case. Of course, we wind up with a reversed communication line, which is to say that your individual winds up with the processes still at E, and nothing has been done to put him at C. Now, impulses and so forth in this degree, you're having this avalanche, you see, is, according to the definition of communication, putting the individual at E. You see that? Now, the case progresses on up the line. You resolve the energy starvation of the individual, and when that is resolved, then you will have to work on an output, which is to E, which is an outward avalanche. He must be able to outflow just this heavily as he is inflowed. If we don't do that, of course, we haven't put the individual at C. We've kept him at E. Now, it's quite natural for an auditor to try to keep a pre-clear at E. The pre-clear starts in at E with the auditor at C, and the auditor is just liable to continue on with the same pattern and not change it. And it'll wind up at the end of an intensive or something of the sort with a pre-clear still at E and the auditor at C. Now, therefore, we must reverse this process on the individual. We have to get an outgoing avalanche. We don't necessarily have to pick up that manifestation, but we'd certainly better handle the problem because we are trying with a preclear to stretch a line with him at C and at least his body at E. His body would be a very small portion of his environment to put at E. Now, another thing is agreement with the meshed universe is agreement of wavelength with the meshed universe. That is, in essence, a statement of agreement with the meshed universe. A person is terribly convinced of the solidity of walls, and therefore he starts to match up all of his networks with the walls on wavelength, and all the energy he puts out is in terms of walls, and when he exteriorizes, he puts a beam on something, and the walls suck up the beam. And this is very upsetting to him. This gets him stuck on walls and ceilings and things like that, and various weird things occur. And in addition to that, this statement could be made. An individual is as bad off as he has energy floating around, that is to say, ridges and so forth. He is as bad off as he has energy floating around. In spite of his insatiable appetite for energy, he is as bad off as he has energy stored in his vicinity. There's a direct index between the condition of case and the mass of energy which the individual has sitting there in terms of ridges and lines and so forth. And we should recognize that the state of clearing of an individual must admit of his getting rid of something, i.e. a body. While psychotherapy could have been summed up with the effort to get somebody to get rid of something, this puts somebody at the C end of the line over to the E end of the line. You see, he can get rid of something. So rejection level, the pre-clear is quite important, and if you were working with a pre-clear, and you were going to have him for a very, very short space of time, we would simply work with him to find a rejection level, something that would leave him rapidly. And then we would find other things which we could make him reject, and we would have in that a total psychotherapy which is very superior to anything which has been done in the field of psychoanalysis. And yet that was the goal of psychoanalysis. I said in 16G and didn't say much more about it that we could solve psychoanalysis. Well, we have this thing called rejection level, and we find what the rejection level of the individual is, and we get him to reject something. And in such a wise, we can at least put him at the C end of the line, no matter how tenuously and strangely and peculiarly he may be there. We can get him to reject something. If you go around to a psycho institution, such as the American Psychoanalytic Association, and audit their president or something like that, remember this, because it's a very workable therapy. It works within their frame of reference, too. You get the rejection level. What can you reject? But if you were to go around and inspect a few psychos, you would find out that they would not even let go of their pocketbook. This is the normal course. They wouldn't let go of anything. And they can't let go of a word because a word has enormous mass. And symbol has great mass, all things have great mass, thoughts have great mass, and they can't let go of these things, and they're holding all these things close to them. Now, an individual's as bad off as he can't reject. Well, that's saying the same thing. An individual's as bad off as he can't post something out there at a distance from him and send something, some impulse or thought from where he is to where it is. This is C to E. The rejection is just C to E, and you put there the preclear at C and get him to E. Now, the reason you run incoming avalanches is because all of his screens are erected to resist the inflow of the mass universe, which is insisting on making an E out of an individual. He is at effect. So you just break these down and solve his DEI progress into the fact that he thinks he desires all these things. See, that's desire and force inhibit curve, which he has followed down, and he has insatiable appetites in terms of mess. Well, this is very weird. He shouldn't have such insatiable appetites in terms of mess, but he does, and you run your avalanche and acceptance level merely to remedy that. Now, you as an auditor are missing the story entirely if you run inflow, and don't immediately turn around and run some outflow on the individual. The outflow is what's important. The only reason you are running the inflow is to solve the DEI cycle, desire and force inhibit curve. All right, the next point that you should have rather thoroughly is that your individual is usually doing as a thetan those things which are psychosomatic to the body. You get this fellow 10 feet back of his head, the body is still coughing. It's the thetan who can cough. Works this way. The individual has put something there. He has both sides of the aberration. He's holding on to both sides of the aberration, holding on to it firmly, and when he moves out of the body, he normally just keeps on holding on to both sides of the aberration. This is a very simple thing to see. The second that you find somebody with chronic cough or chronic liver pain or a chronic something or other, and you move him 10 feet back of his head, and you wouldn't do this early in the process, but after you got him cleaned up and taking him on a grand tour of the universe and had moved him in and out of a lot of things, so he's in pretty good shape and his perception was in pretty good shape, you might do this. You see, he still has this chronic somatic, let's say. Well, you just have him have that chronic somatic while 1,000 miles away from the body, and you have him start coughing. The second he starts coughing himself as a thetan, you see, then the body starts coughing. And he'll find out he's coughing automatically as a thetan. He'll start coughing as a thetan. He'll cough, and you know, you say, stop coughing. And he'll go on cough as a thetan. And he'll say, wait a minute, I haven't got this under control at all. You run into the automatic coughing machine on the individual. Now, that is the individual at work, and his chronic somatics. These chronic somatics are things he's put there in order to compel obedience on the part of the body or sympathy on the part of his environment. That's his service facsimile, and we're back to that one. The thetan carries the service facsimile around. Of course, the body can be minus a leg, and various other things can be wrong with the body. But if it's hurting him, the thetan's keeping the pain there. If it's bothering him, if there's a ghost leg there, then the thetan's got it there. Anything which tends to become chronic then can be counted upon by the auditor to be held on to by the thetan, or put there originally by the thetan. This doesn't put all the blame on the thetan. You understand, there is such a thing as bacteria. There are these acute ills to which the body is subject. Broken leg and acute ills. But if these things persist, and what persistence, by the way, they do have, is the thetan. Now, here's another problem in C to E. He can be cause of something, can't he? He can be cause of pain in the body. You'll find a lot of preclears will sit around and simply run a lot of somatics. They're just demonstrating that they can cause an effect upon the body. All right, now let's take up a factor that we haven't taken up very much before, and that's the factor of control. This is a very old one. This is the fall of 1951. Control consists of starting, stopping, and changing. That which you can start, stop, and change, you can control. If an individual at any time can bring something into a state of control, it's because he has been able to start, stop, and change it. If you want somebody to bring something under control, then you merely have him start, stop, and change it for a while. Let's be very specific and make a very, very good application of this just in the business of livingness, not in the business of psychotherapy or souls or anything else. And let's take a jet pilot. And this jet pilot we find is very spooky. He's just been through a crash, and it upsets him to think about airplanes and so forth, and yet he's a good jet pilot. And when he gets back to flying again, this will reflect itself in caution, extreme caution on his part as a pilot, and he will no longer be fitted as a combat pilot. The boys, when they pass 31, 32, they are the best pilots that are around, but all, and in their own words, the peaks are gone. They say they haven't this sudden elan that carries them through emergencies and so forth. They still have a feeling of caution about it, which is to say fear. And the more courage which they put up to go past this fear, of course, results in the same manifestations you see in courage processing. The particle courage simply melts down the resisting material, simply melts down the various things which are standing in their road on the way to cowardice. And the next thing you know, they're in shaking terror. How'd they get in shaking terror? Why, by being courageous. That's because they've had a crash, something of the sort. Now, the essence of that is they do not believe that they can control his jet plane. And if you were a flight officer, one who had charge of the rehabilitation of pilots, the thing that you should do, the thing which a flight officer should do, to get the boy back there pitching again, would simply be put him in a plane and have him start it and stop it and alter some kind of a painted pattern on the wings. Sounds silly, doesn't it? And then take it down and taxi it someplace else and stop it and turn it another direction and taxi it and stop it and start its burners and put them out and start them again and put them out and taxi it down another runway and stop it, not even take it into the air, you see. This fellow's perfectly capable of taking this plane off. He'd think this is very silly, you know, for you to do that. And all of a sudden, he hasn't taken it into the air at all. The results of the crash will simply blow up. I mean, there's just no further effect from a crash there, handling the actual object. Now let's take somebody, more practical application, who's been in an automobile accident and who is very afraid of driving automobiles and who drives them at very slow speed and gets in the way of traffic and is more liable to have an accident going slow than going fast. And what do we do with this fellow? We have him start and stop a car. We have him start and stop it at various speeds. We finally get him, get it up to 60 and then stop it from 60 miles an hour. Well, we start that in by getting him to go up to 15 and then stop it again. If you were going to teach somebody, now let's put a more practical application on it, and get completely out of the field of difficulties. And if you were going to teach somebody to drive a car, you would take him out and have him start and stop the car and start and stop the car and start and stop the car and then change its course and then stop it and then change its course and then stop it again and start and stop the car and start and stop the car. And if you did that for a day or two, your man would never have an accident. Never. All right, control is start, stop, and change. It says that in self-analysis, one of the original additions of self-analysis. Now, this is very important to you because many a preclear who has not exteriorized exteriorizes when his ability to control the body is rehabilitated. So you use opening procedure and you have him start, stop, and change the body, just like he was running a car. Body's carbon oxygen engine that runs at 98.6 degrees Fahrenheit. Doesn't run well without fuel. You're pretty clear that it's trying to stick in the body and energize lines and do various things when the body itself isn't fed, is simply being robbed continually and is on a compulsive cause. In other words, every time he generates a little energy, the body takes it away from him. So the body is forcing him to be cause, and this in itself is the dramatization of compulsive cause. An individual who is being forced to work for a family eventually will rebel as cause. He's working to support a family. And the family takes it for granted and after a while imagines that it should force him to support the family once in a while. And he will get the idea eventually that anything he does, they'll just pick up the energy of. And he'll rebel. He'll at least rebel by being apathetic and not having a good time about it. A society which forces an individual to work consistently and continually is putting him on a forced cause basis, and the individual then refuses to be cause, and you have the actual story of psychotherapy and interiorization, exteriorization, the difficulties with Thetan in this universe. He's continually being forced to be cause so that he will then permit an inflow. The American workman of a certain social strata today works solely to eat and to have sex and to have a few beers. He's been forced by the economic system to put out. He's been forced into output. The second he's forced into output, he's forced into being cause, so therefore he won't be cause any more than he has to be, and he will become starved for an effect. This starvation for an effect reflects itself in artificial entertainments. Spectator sports. A case that is bad off could be called not the specter unexteriorized, but the spectator. He has to have an inflow. And he actually has more appetite for inflow than he has joy in outflow. And when you get a person in this condition, he'll ransack all over the place trying to find new inflows. And when you audit him, he simply dramatizes this. He dramatizes for inflows. Well, you can cure this up, as I said before, by having this processing, by starting a heavy inflow, and by keeping this inflow up so it'll break down this energy starvation and so forth in the bank. And then don't forget that you've only done half of it, and you may have put the individual even down tone scale. Now we've got to turn around and throw it back up again, because we've got to have a rejection. We've got to be able to get a C to E with a C where the preclear is. Now let's take some other manifestation. You say the preclear be 3 feet back of your head. He can't be 3 feet back of your head. That's because he can't move something with certainty. Again, we have a process of control. He cannot start and stop something, namely himself, and himself as a Thetan. Your drills of opening procedure should, of course, then embrace start, stop, and change in terms of control. Control is the ability to start, stop, and change something. An individual who is afraid is only afraid that something will go out of control or that his body will go out of control. That's all he's afraid of. He isn't afraid of anything else. All of his fear can be summed up in the start, stop, and change. He's afraid something will change on him, and he hasn't predicted it or caused the change, or he will be adversely affected by the change, which is to say he'll be stopped by the change, or he'll be started in some undesirable direction by the change. He is afraid things won't stop or won't start. A person, by the way, can have a very aberrative object around in a car that won't start. He isn't sure the car will start. You'll find out he'll start really going down tone scale. The car won't start. He goes out, he puts his finger on the button, he doesn't know whether the car's going to start or not. A piece of machinery which will start and stop with certainty under any given circumstances and at any finite speed, and which will hold its course truly, is not aberrative, not even vaguely. But when they begin to have their brakes worn out, so you don't know whether they're going to stop, and when their motors start going haywire, so you don't know whether they're going to start or not, they become very strange indeed. And when they become steerably uncertain, then you really have something. The fellow has a slight wobble on his front wheels, and he has to keep compensating to keep him running off the edge of the road. A little wobble there, the king bolts a little worn, the steering radius rod's a little worn. He has this constant tension on the thing. He doesn't quite know which way this car's going to dive. If you were to take some individual who was having a rough time in life and go out and inspect the car he drove around in all the time and insist that he put it into, it doesn't cost much, by the way, to put a car into condition so it'll do these things, and insist that he have the radius rods tightened up and the king bolts changed or fixed up so there's no wobble in the front wheels, so that his car will continue to generate, so that the spark plugs are clean enough so that the car will start, and so that his brakes are well enough adjusted so that he can stop, you would see quite a change in this individual's physical manifestation. Also, you possibly, after that, might be able to exteriorize him. Has that much effect upon him? Something that's moving him around all the time can evaluate for him very heavily. That which moves the individual around can evaluate for him, because it's starting and stopping and changing him. If anything can start and stop an individual, it can change him. if you were to take a company of men and wish to put them under your immediate control as soon as possible, you would not drill them in the time-honored method used by armies. You would start them and stop them and start them and stop them and start them and stop them and start them and stop them, and then you could change them any way you wanted to. Realizing this one way or the other, many, many years ago, I had a very recalcitrant crew, and I used to do things to these boys in the first few weeks that they were aboard on the basis of starting and stopping them. And they finally fell into line and would handle the ship the way they were supposed to. They came aboard with only one idea in mind. They were out of Portsmouth Naval Prison, and they were shipped to me en masse as a crew. And I looked at them the first day I came aboard, and I was very surprised because I had never before seen sailors this dirty and this slovenly. And I was very amazed. And I went down to the office where their petty officer had delivered their service records and started going through their service records. And I found each one had been temporarily suspended in terms of sentence or court-martial in order to be put back into service due to the scarcity of men. I had 100 convicts, in other words. And it was an interesting thing because it took me 30 days to beat those men into being men again. But I had no help in it. I had a couple of ensigns, and we used to... Well, they're nice things to have around. They're decorative when you have lady visitors. But even that gives you trouble because they cease to be interested in the ensigns. Anyway, we got them into line, which is to say a bosun's mate and myself. And the bosun's mate go down and muster them according to my orders. And then when he had them all set, and was all set to release them, why, I'd come out on the bridge wing, and I'd say, no, there's a couple of more things, you see. And that was a slight change, you see. And any time any one of those men was given an order on the thing, I would release him, and then I would say, well, come back a moment. I have something else. And start him, stop him, dismiss him, recall him. Unpredicted changes. And enough unpredicted starts and stops, and they came under very heavy control. And then you simply had to tell them, now you boys are going to survive the war merely because I want to survive the war, not because you do, but because I do. And anybody who is letting the ship down, of course, is letting everybody else down, but particularly me. And I am not as careless of life as you are, and I want to survive the war. And so therefore, you're going to survive. And they had no other choice but to agree with me. And it was a beautiful little ship. Now, how's that done? That's to start and stop them. Start and stop them, then you can change them. Unpredicted starts and stops. Well, that lays open to you a kind of a psychotherapy. Opening procedure can be run in this fashion. It's not recommended particularly, where you have an individual who is heading for succumb at a mad rate and he's not going to change. You can put yourself with relationship to him in a position where he has no choice but to change. By doing what? By starting and stopping him. Now, taking orders, tolerance for taking direction, is a different subject than this. You see, that's just a little bit different. This individual is so afraid of orders, he's just sure he's going to be killed if he obeys any kind of a direction. Well, that means he's avoiding the entire environment. So you give him a bunch of easily followed through orders. You tell him to go find a place in the room, go put his finger on it, see, spot it, and then make the postulate that he's going to do this. He picks out a point in the room and so forth. He's merely following direction, and you put into his hands the ability to make the directions and carry them out. That's a little bit different than what I'm talking to you about in terms of control. You have an individual who's giving you a bad time, who is not easily controllable, who's on a compulsive communication basis, and so forth. You start him doing things and stop doing things in terms of opening procedure. And you'll find out that he'll become very rattled and rather antagonistic at first, and then will sort of fall into the groove, because people have been doing this to him for 76 trillion years, and it's rather easy for somebody else to come along and do it to him. He will come under your control sufficiently so that then you can deliver his control into him. It's a shorter method, but one which requires considerable poison judgment on the part of the auditor, and if it's not working for you, then you better abandon it. We say, all right, now you see the center of the room there, pick out the exact center of the room. All right, get up and go over there. When he's halfway there, you say, now stop. He says, well, I haven't reached that point yet. You say, well, that's all right. Turn around. Now go back to the point where you came from. There, back to the chair. All right. Now go to the center of the room. Before he gets there again, you say, all right, stop. He says, I haven't reached there yet. You say, that's all right. You see the corner of the room over there? All right. Now go to the center of the room. Give him impulses to start, impulses to stop, then you cancel them. Rather dangerous process, because you will knock him into an hypnotic trance if you're not careful. But this is a process. It should not be suddenly wiped out of your curriculum simply because it's dangerous. It has to be done fairly kindly, and the more kindly it is done, the more effective it is. But the individual will get into a relationship to you eventually, at the end of the session, or end of a couple of sessions, where you say, you will now change, and he will. In other words, you can put it on a basis of, you can determine that he can change, and then he can finally determine that he can change. Now you get him to start and stop himself, after you've gotten him under your control, and you get him to start and stop himself, until under your control, he's under his control. And then you can bring about a change. Start, stop, change are the component parts of control. Now, the individual who cannot let go of his body is anxious about control of the body. Now, this is demonstrated because every few cases, you're going to be able to exteriorize somebody who doesn't exteriorize at all by simply having him run a concept. I can control this body from outside. I can't control this body from outside. I can control it from outside. I can't control it from outside. And then all of a sudden he can. Of course, that individual will move outside the body, feel immediately degraded, and is liable to snap right back in. Or that individual will move outside, put his hand, quote unquote, on the wall and get stuck to the wall, and other such things will occur. All right. This, in essence, going down the line on what I have been attempting to teach you during these last few weeks, should add up to you to be a fairly concise knowledge of beingness. And what I've been teaching you has included beingness itself, which is to say the validating of life. Endowment, livingness processing, we were calling it, endowing things with life and disendowing things with life. And disendowing the past, present, and future, endowing the past, present, future, these are the best things that an individual does. Now, occasionally an individual gets stuck on an endowment of a certain point from the no to the eat sex band. He gets stuck somewhere on this range of no, look, emote, effort, think, symbol, eat, sex. He's stuck someplace there on a stuck endowment. You see that? He's endowing eatingness. He's endowing effortingness. He's endowing sexingness. He's endowing something else than the whole band. He has a fixed endowment. He endows sex. That's all he can endow. You know, only sexual subjects, and so on. And he's even down below that point, and of course you've got that cycle continues on below itself. You realize that. We go down on a new no look, and so forth. That is not just one band, you know, that just sits there. None of these things are. They repeat themselves. After you get down to sex, then we go down below that, and we get into no again. And then we go all the way down, and we finally get all the way through to a lower manifestation of sex, and then below that we get to know. You got that. I mean, we covered that much earlier. We demonstrated this. Just get these two things, think, effort. See, and then we go down below effort, and we get think again. And then we go down to a new level of effort, and so on. In other words, that's a repetitive scale. Well, an individual stuck somewhere on the tone scale on one of these things or more, and as you scare these things up and blow them into view, you're actually endowing some of these things with life. Now, I want to tell you here today, this Monday morning, what the preclear is dramatizing and why he cannot succeed easily in his auditing. We've long since examined the messed universe in terms of barriers. The messed universe is a game consisting of barriers. Well, an individual starts running into these barriers often enough so that he begins to have thought barriers too. Well, he gets communication barriers. He gets this slab of bacon on the rapier that I was describing to you one day. This slab of bacon on the rapier is a barrier. It is a barrier between his C to E. He's trying to go through a ridge. What exactly is this ridge? This ridge is inevitably and always a failure. It's a failure in one of two things. It's a failure to endow with life or a failure to disendow. His communication, his cause to effect, have two general intents. Just as you have in automaticity mocking machines and unmocking machines as the two kinds of machines, so you have these two intents, to endow with life, to disendow with life. And your preclear is dramatizing this. I don't care what preclear you have, where, he's dramatizing this, and this is auditing and why he wants auditing. He's trying to endow with life or disendow. That's all he's trying to do. He's trying to endow his body with life or disendow it with no life. Well, why can't he do these two things? As you run through these communication lines, he comes up and goes aground on the ridges, which caused him to fail in this. Let's say he had a dog that died. His grandfather died. And during an operation, he almost lost his own life. Now, where's he stuck? Well, if you want to get a hold of an E-meter, you can pick these points up, just bang, 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 that needle will just go rigid. You're trying to pour livingness through communication lines, which are primarily blocked or barriered by just this manifestation. He tried to endow with life and failed, and the lines are blocked. Because, why? He can't endow that area with life. Why? He failed. He knows he can't. We can't get communication through it. He's going nuts. He's sitting there trying to get communications through these lines, and he can't get communications through these lines, so he's blocked. Then there's the other side of it. You check out what's the remaining part of the bank that remains unavailable to him, and you will find that it is that part of the bank where he has failed to disendow. Somebody was being mean, hateful, and destructive toward him, and he decided to disendow them or kill them. And he tried to do this, and the police and other things and so on said, no, no, no. And so he tries to get communications through there, which is to say to pull back life from that area, and he knows he can't pull back life from that area because that person is there alive. And other people present shows up in this manifestation. The fellow has somebody present. Well, he tried to disendow that person of life one time and failed to do so. All right, you see that communication system? Well, we see these slabs of ridges that are stuck there. Why can't he get this communication system clean and clear? Why can't he shoot his communications through these lines? Well, those are the two major blocks. He's tried to endow with life and disendow with life. How is this processed? You can process it by duplication. You can process it by exteriorization, interiorization, and mock-ups. Or you can simply blow it up by restoring his havingness and then permitting him to reject. It'll all blow up the same way. But where an individual is having a great deal of difficulty in getting his havingness restored, or is having a great deal of difficulty with havingness or life in general, it's because his endowment, disendowment blocks are very great. So occasionally with profit, you can simply have him duplicate the operation where he fled from the body and tried to bring it back to life, or some such incident, because it'll go into an earlier incident, and just duplicate it, duplicate it, and duplicate it, and duplicate it, and it'll eventually burn up. And it's his primary block. He tried to bring this back to life, and he has this tremendous effort surrounding it. Okay. That's what your preclear is dramatizing when he is being audited. And that's what your person who's self-auditing particularly is dramatizing. He's run into one of these incidents. He's stuck in it. He's trying to endow this thing with life, this body with life. It isn't as alive as he wants it to be, or it's too alive for him, one way or the other. And so he's trying to change its life endowment. He's trying to change the life endowment of his environment simply because of these failures where he's tried to endow and disendow. No more concise statement could be made, I do believe, at this time of that than that. He isn't as alive as he wants to be. He isn't as dead as he wants to be. His entire life has become extremely involved in terms of endowment and disendowment. He's endowed many things with life. He's now sorry for it. He's trying to pull the life back out of them. Well, they're there no longer. When we look at that, we can recognize what our preclear is doing, and recognizing it, have a better remedy of it, because that is the ridge. Now, he's trying to do this, which is the same thing but differently stated. And this is the better generalized auditing statement of this. The other is the behavior statement. Now, this is the auditing statement. He's trying to avoid having nothing there, or avoid having something there. He thinks of the future. Now, let's take fame, and let's analyze fame. We find out the individual is trying to put something far enough up the track so that even if he loses his body, he'll still have something in the future. That's the main problem of the thing. Fame. He's trying to endow something with life into the future, which he can then have. This is his main difficulty. In the past, he has endowed so many things with life, or he's disendowed so many things with life, that he feels then he can't have in terms of the future, so he goes into the past to endow and disendow. In other words, he's got something in the past and he wants nothing there, or he has nothing in the past and he wants something there. And you can run this very simply. I'll process it on you today. As we review this material, we see that on this codification, it should be very easy to grasp. It should be very easy to sit there and know exactly what you're looking at, the preclear. He's endowed automatic machinery with life. He doesn't want it now. It's become his master. That's the Frankenstein effect. And he can't disendow it. Why can't he disendow his automatic machinery with life? Well, that's because he's failed so often in disendowing. The police do not permit murder. They don't permit him to do various things which disendow with life. So he knows he can't disendow with life. This he knows very well. So he can't disendow his automatic machinery, and it just keeps on running. Well, that's very upsetting to him. His environment has many things in it which he feels antipathetic to survival, and yet he feels he is endowing these things with life, or he has endowed them with life, and he can't take them. Now, he has tried to bring his body back to life, and this is the case you're having great difficulty with. He has tried to bring his body back to life and has only succeeded in doing so with great pain and effort. And the pain and effort was so great that when you ask him to bring his body back to life again, he simply dramatizes this incident. He's trying to bring himself to life. Now, of course, he can't get any more alive than he was because he knows how much work that is. That's the incident that he's running into. There will be at least one incident there, which will be very great. Now, every past death is such an incident. Therefore, end of cycle processing, whereby he's dead, and departs, and dead and departs, and dead and departs, has a tendency to knock this out. But other processes would have to be entered in there, where he has got a dead body and it's dust, and he builds it right back up again and makes it into a live body. Well, that would be success. But your pre-clear has failed at this so often that you will have to be very cagey when you do this type of endocycle process, and you have to do some very good auditing to get him to build that body up until it exists again. Now, what's this darkness? This darkness is a person tries to disendow something of life and can't do so, so he takes the secondary choice, which is, say, covers it with blackness. Underneath every blackness, there's an effort to disendow. Now, we've tried to cover this problem of the preclear in various ways. Covering the problem of the auditor is also, to some degree, the problem of covering the preclear. That auditor is a good auditor who is willing to endow things with life, endow a preclear with life. A doctor is a good doctor when he does this well. He's a bad doctor when he does it badly. I don't care how many medicines he uses, how well trained he is, how much his existence has been spotted with solid A grades and pats on the head from medical schools, he's a bad doctor if he cannot endow with life. Now, there's a gradient scale of endowing with life. One of those is healing, doctoring. That is a low order. That is repair. There's a higher order than that, much higher. Simply in taking things that are alive and making them more alive. That can be done in many ways. And then there are higher ranges than that, where one takes things which are obviously inanimate and animates them. And this is all the same scale. Now, an individual who still is afraid of his fellows or still hates his fellows and so forth thinks he'll be able to take inanimate objects and suddenly bring them to life and do this type of necromancy. No, he won't, because he's on the band which has to have a great deal of fluidity in endowment with life. If an individual's had a lot of difficulty endowing things with life, he's liable to be apathetic about it. A great doctor is not a great healer, necessarily. He could also be a great healer. Also. It would almost be a debasement of his talent simply to repair. Repair, repair. If he was good enough, he would never have to repair. You see that? Now, when an individual has failed pretty well across the boards, he can't even any longer heal. And when he can't heal, he's sort of out the bottom. Below that, the only thing he can do is kill. Disendow. This is the final despair. That whole bracket from kill down to be cruel, down to torture, down to be very covert, down to not wanting to be critical, which is about the lowest level on this band, down to no place. And when one has run the band up the line pretty well, it's in the bracket of being able to heal. And as a case, actually, he can get up to a bracket where he can heal without symbols. And when he, without that type of communication, And then when he gets up the band higher, he can just straight out endow with life. He can materialize things, in other words. But there's where materialization belongs, endowing things with existence. And it's way up. Do you think that some little character that's running up and down South Alvarado is going to be able to forage through life and get there with snaps and snarls and sneers and minor cruelties and betrayals and so forth? Well, you're looking at sort of a beetle, you know. That's about it. They can't even endow themselves with life. And they try to take life from everything. They disendow. You may often ask yourself, does the mercy or the feeling of desiring to help my fellows and so forth, does this really mean a sort of a debased propitiation of all existence? And that's sort of a propitiation of all existence. And it's about 2 or 3 light years higher on the tone scale than the fellow who has to kill to live. It's way up. So don't think you're groveling out the bottom end of the scale merely because you want your fellow human beings to be happy or not. You're so far out of the reach of the understanding of the fellow whose main joy in life is going out and hunting something terrible and ferocious and harmful to him, like a duck, that you probably couldn't look down from where you are at him with one of these super observation telescopes they put in these jet planes they send over enemy territory. You find a great deal of difficulty in trying to understand this man. Many of you many times have tried to understand such a person. How can he do this, and what is this all about? And we just don't quite understand this, and yet the fellow seems to be getting along all right. His mercilessness, his ability to rip and tear the guts out of anybody around him and to build up only for this or that, and very narrow goals, and very destructive in all directions. And this must be the way to live. This is a tooth and claw universe. Well, I point out to you something. Anybody with an ability to endow with life can go out and change the course of any tiger in any jungle. And there's nothing better in terms of killing than a Mr. Tiger. He's built on that basis. And he is not long for this world. If somebody who really, really can endow with life or disendow with life, who can handle life itself, doesn't have to go around on an obsessive murder and so forth, if somebody like that happens to come along and is 3 feet back of his head, because you can make the tiger do anything you want to. It's quite remarkable. But the tiger can't make you do anything he wants you to. He can't even imagine what he wants you to do. And remember that when you face these cruel, self-sufficient, they know they're right, destructive boys in life, who think you are doing something mean and wicked and diabolical by trying to help out some fellow man. Just remember that a tiger never, as ferocious as he is, never has been able to and never will be able to be 3 feet back of anybody's head and make him do what he wants. His total basis control is stop, dead. And I mean that literally. He can stop things dead. Now, the creative point of the tone scale, the creative point of the cycle of action of the messed universe, is that point, which is a beginning point, and there you have three-dimensional. You have space, you have three-dimensional view, you have space, you have all these other things.